Okay, now, what did you say, Shawnee, about... You said something about...
I would never conduct research.
You'd never conduct research under the conditions in which the research participants were compelled to participate in the research.
No, of course not.
You would never do that. Wow, you know, I thought you were going to say something different. I was wrong.
What do you think of me?
Now, what would you do if you were a consultant in a school and the teachers were compelled to work with you and to be the consultee in a consultation project?
I guess I'm just struggling with then what would be the appropriate context in which a principal was going to implement an obligatory system and was bringing in somebody from the outside to organize it and or teach it. What would be the appropriate, I guess, title for that process or just context?
If they had no voice or control over their participation in the consultation process?
If the teachers, you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, if it's coming from up above, you're saying, this is how we can do things now. Would you say it's different when it's mental health related?
I'm saying any time a consultee is compelled, forced into participating, that's unethical. Otherwise, yeah, you should call it something else. The teachers have to be, you know, willingly participating, just like research. I mean, I think that's a valid analogy. So if it's not that, then what is it? Is it you're coming in to provide a lecture? You're teaching? It's like an in-service teaching situation. You're doing an in-service. They have to, you know, attend. So attendance is mandatory. Now, you guys, do you know whether teachers are being compelled to attend your...
Because I think they're all going. I can imagine if you would all voluntarily go. Yeah. Maybe they all not really want to. But.
There weren't 20 when I went last year. Okay. I can't make it, by the way. I'm sorry. But
how many were there last year?
I would say maybe 10.
I don't know. Might be just.
She might even
say expect 20
yeah,
in case.
Just in case. Just in case Miriam and Gil Tippy show up as well.
Wait, will she be there?
She wasn't last year. I don't know.
She told us the supervisors
though. Yeah. Okay. I don't know if that's a satisfactory response. But certainly if you want to compel them to attend your consultations, you're welcome to do that. All right. So individual interventions often are not adequate in dealing with issues related to educational and psychological well-being of students, which lends itself to working at a more systemic level. Systems U allows for capacity building within schools and includes development of supportive environments for all stakeholders. So we're looking at the environment, how we can change the environment that affects a number of students, not just one student. Allows for the use of ecological and preventive perspectives and their related interventions. And it can reflect a postmodernism point of view, which Dorothy really doesn't explain in the book. Here's a systems approach. So, when the AIDS scare came out in the early 90s, it struck fear in the hearts of nurses and doctors who work with blood products. And the idea initially was to identify those patients who had AIDS. And so you put like a sticker on a chart or whatever. And guess what? AIDS patients didn't like that, you know, because it stigmatized them, right? And so the original solution was individualistic, right? We will focus on an individual patient, identify him or her as having AIDS. So then AIDS patients, as I said, didn't like that because they were being stigmatized. So what was the next step? They went to a more systemic intervention. You remember what it was? It's two words. Sort of a U and a P.
Not the unified protocol, but that's a problem.
When I say it, you're all going to know.
One down, sure.
Yes! Universal precautions. Oh, so close.
You're all thinking
it. You just didn't want to say it.
Universal precautions. So everybody treated patients as if they all had AIDS. Right? So when we go in, we have our blood drawn and everything. They're treating us as if we had AIDS.
Or
right?
Something else.
Or something else, right. But the reason for that is so that no one patient or no particular group of patients is stigmatized. That's working at a systemic level. I'm going to make a system-wide change that's going to affect all future patients when they get their blood drawn or whatever, whenever blood products are held or handled. Everybody's going to be treated as if they had AIDS or something else. And so no one is stigmatized anymore. We're all stigmatized, if you want to put it that way. But if we're all stigmatized, then none of us is stigmatized.
Yeah.
What?
None of us is.
My mom was an English teacher.
So,
consultants can take on a broad framework for consultation because of the complexity of organizational factors and how they can be changed. So, we need to understand how entire organizations work and operate in order to affect change at a systemic level. None of us is immune to the changes that can be made at the systemic level. Consultants and consultees can intervene at several ethological levels, including the individual client level. So individual client level is not excluded from intervention. It's just now part of a wider arsenal of interventions that include interventions at a systemic and ecological level. It takes the focus of a reactive approach for dealing with issues of individual students to a broader approach that promotes well-being and prevention of all students. I don't know if you want to prevent students. Maybe students' problems. System-level change demands that all aspects of education be examined in terms of multiple levels and be based on multiple partnerships among stakeholders. So what are some of the different levels, system levels in the school setting? Can you identify some of them?
Administration.
Teachers. Students.
The board.
School board.
The auxiliary staff.
Okay, so
custodial staff. Director, people, like,
okay, so financial people, clerical staff. How about the lunch ladies?
Resource education also.
Resource education, cafeteria staff. So these are all different systems that operate, you would hope, seamlessly to present a curriculum that students can learn from. So when you're doing systems level consultation, you need to be aware of all these different systems and how they operate and how they interact with each other and how different people get along
from these different systems. All students need to receive services that match their needs, and that's part of what RTI, this Response to Intervention program, does. The idea is that the consultant will use existing structures and processes within the school to target, initiate, and maintain system-level changes, including evaluating and sustaining change in this initiative. So you also have to build in some kind of evaluation process when you're engaging in consultation at a systems level.
One concern is that not all teachers are comfortable with systems approaches. Some teachers want more concrete ways of approaching perceived problems. So let's say that you're implementing an anti-bullying program. We beat this anti-bullying program example into the ground, I know. But
we really have to stop.
It's so bullying.
We should develop an anti-bullying program, right?
It's not a bullying.
Yeah. Bullies have rights, too.
So popular.
So, you know, a teacher might say, you know, I don't care about an anti-bullying program. I want you to, you know, take care of Billy in my classroom who's picking on Sally. Some teachers are more narrowly focused on the immediate problems in their classroom, and you need to be able to sell what it is you're consulting. So if you're selling an anti-bullying program, you need to get the teachers to buy into that kind of program and become emotionally invested in it. And that can be very difficult, especially with some teachers who are looking for more concrete ways of approaching their perceived problems.
It's also, I feel like, far less likely to work if it involves so many more people getting on board. You really need to believe that you're going to have enough people who are firmly invested in the system that to actually get it off the ground.
Yeah, I mean, well, look at the Affordable Care Act. You have so many different stakeholders, and you know, it's being the attempts of tearing it apart are so powerful. There are a lot of forces involved, a lot of forces that want it to succeed, and a lot of forces that want it to fail. And these forces are not talking to each other, and it's tearing away at the fabric of this great idea. Many school consultants have not been trained in system methods. You guys can't say that.
Woo!
You've been trained. All right. Consider yourselves trained. Consultants examine the child in interaction with a variety of levels of ecosystems, such as home, school, and community. So not only are there systems within the school, but you also have to consider this. I mean, the home is a system in a sense, and the community is a very complex system. So you need to think of all of these different systemic levels when planning a consultation. It complicates the nature of the consultation relationship.
And what about developing a framework for prevention and intervention in school setting?
Well, prevention programs are seeing a resurgence in schools. Many have been designated as evidence-based. So this idea of anti-bullying program, there are these evidence-based anti-bullying programs that you could actually implement in schools. They come in like in packages and you just implement them. They have to be tailored to accommodate the particular unique needs of each school. Just like a therapy package, or DBT. DBT needs to be uniquely tailored to the needs of your particular patient. The focus of prevention is to build capacities and systems, for example, a school or an organization, so that overall development of the members of that system, in things such as mental health, social skills, and health, so that that's optimized relative to the mission of the system, which would be the school setting.
We talked about this, the different levels of prevention. Tier 1 would be
level one, right? Primary prevention. This is secondary prevention. And this is tertiary prevention, targeting students who need individualized and intense intervention. Each of the three tiers provides great opportunities for consultation. That's where you guys come in. We talked a little bit about time constraints. Constraints are large and a real issue for conducting effective consultation and collaboration in school settings. You might have to be doing it down the hallway. Limitation of school consultation collaborations that both take time and do well. So on the one hand, you need time to do consultation and collaboration well, but on the other hand, you don't have that kind of time in the school setting. Effective time management on the part of the school professionals is one obvious help in creating time for consultation and collaboration. So if you have good effective time management skills, you might be able to do some of this. Consultants can have a more positive impact on the consultation process by using their limited time to observe and assess the problem, model, and coach. Other strategies, early release, late arrival of students. This is to give yourself time to work with teachers. So can the principal allow students to be released early from school or to arrive late at school to give you time to work with teachers? The use of substitutes teachers, teaching strategies that might free up personnel. So let's say you have a teacher take on two classes rather than one class for 2 hours out of the day. You're smiling. You don't see that happening. No way in hell.
Personnel, I think feel very overburdened as it is.
But if it's in the service of having one teacher being trained in some new skill for 2 hours, and then the next day they switch off and that teacher takes the two classes, and the teacher who had the two classes the previous day gets the same training, what about that? No.
I don't think any one teacher will agree to have 60 kids an hour for 2 hours.
No.
It's just not feasible. Unless they have other staff with them,
right? What about on the playground for 2 hours?
Kind of, maybe there's like a planned program. Maybe there's an assembly.
Assembly.
Get everybody into the auditorium for an hour and bring up some staff.
Maybe. Invite Katy Perry to sit.
Yeah.
Okay, so that could work. Use of phone and other technologies to accomplish your consultation tasks, engaging in peer consultation, so maybe developing a group of teachers who get together and talk with you about making changes, group methods.
So, school consultation in the 21st century, what will it be?
Look at our crystal ball. Focus more on positively impacting all students. You've ever heard of this idea called positive behavioral supports, PBS? You know, you've heard of it? Dave Roll is a big proponent of this. And when I developed the applied child concentration, you know, he wanted me to make sure that I talked about positive behavioral supports in one of the classes. So here, this is for Dave. Positive behavioral supports. This is a very nice chapter in the casebook, not the hardbound textbook, but the soft cover casebook about a positive behavioral support program being implemented in a school setting. And it's basically catching kids being good in various settings. School setting, lunchroom setting, hallway setting, playground setting. And kids can trade these in for rewards. So rather than pointing out when people do something wrong, you're pointing out when kids are doing something good, and you also do it with the teacher, with teachers too. Teachers who are doing something extraordinary, you can give them some kind of positive behavioral support bucks that they can trade in for, a new teacher's contract or something. So that's
that's becoming much more popular, this PBS kind of approach, developing culturally sensitive interventions, engaging in system-level initiatives, using data-driven decision-making process, and using the ecological approach more often, where you're thinking about systems within the school, the home setting, the community. We already talked about using technology to conduct consultation. This is also happening in psychotherapy, too. I mean, getting texts from patients and use of consultation collaboration teams will continue to increase. The role of consultants and collaborators in gifted education, we haven't talked about that at all. That's been on the rise. And school-based consultants will help their schools create a positive climate with regard to school reform movements, continuing impact on public education. Another opportunity to use this PBS positive behavioral supports approach.
Oh, here it is.
Infusion of positive psychology, that's the ideas from Seligman, who studied learned helplessness and later studied positive psychology, to increase the well-being of individuals in school through mental health and behavioral consultation, also receiving more attention. Positive behavioral support movement will provide an approach that allows consultants to help develop support and interventions at individual classroom or school levels. There are multiple issues that are brought about by high-stakes testing, such as teacher burnout, and will be fertile areas for consultation. Anybody? We talked about high-stakes testing 2 weeks ago, didn't we? We mentioned a little bit. So it's creating a lot of stress. I have a couple of friends who teach in the public school, in public schools in New York City, and both of them want to quit because of this high-stakes testing. It's just creating so much stress and pressure on them to make their children, their students, do well in these standardized tests.
Did you have much of that when you were teaching?
Not the classes that I was teaching. Some of it went out of the school, but that wasn't in my classes.
Right, okay.
School-based consultants may well be called upon to serve as cultural mediators between the school and the community.
School-based consultants will be increasingly called upon to promote children's health and collaborate with medical and health professionals to meet children's health needs. So if children are sick and living in unhealthy conditions, you might need to consult with their medical professionals to implement a plan that's going to help them eventually to succeed in school. And the Affordable Care Act obviously understands this, and that's why Obama's fighting so hard for close to universal health care. School-based consultants are increasingly called on to act as organizational consultants during a disaster or a national or local crisis. I mean, Tom, that's what he does with the trauma team. He's really a consultant, and the trauma team are his junior consultants. And they go and they do a consultation, basically.
Tomorrow?
Yes. I don't know if it's tomorrow, but they're going at some point. Tom's going to be testifying in front of a Senate committee on trauma-based response, and he's bringing some students with him.
So cool. New York Senate?
No, U.S.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's cool.
Pretty good. Well, are you on the trauma team? Are you on the trauma team? Oh, you are?
Are you in the team? Sharmukh
and Abgar.
And
who?
Abgar.
Oh, okay. All right.
And that
is it. So should we take a break and then we're going to hear a scintillating presentation by our parent consultants?
No. No. It'd be done if you didn't put it on there.
Are you guys going to use a PowerPoint or no?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think this is the French toast. Do you want a piece?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Oh, that's a lot.
You want some?
No, thank you.
A piece of the French toast.
Oh my
toast.
God, it French smells toast. Like French toast. Cool.
You like it?
Oh, that's good.
Tastes like French toast.
I want to get my French toast. Whoa! Do you want to go reprint the... Oh, yeah, let me make the edit. Do you want me to type in... pronunciations for us, or for own cheese?
That'll take forever. We already wrote it. What's it called?
Dadashi.
It just said
hey.
What? Just changed it to a K?
Yeah, it's a book code.
And then send it to myself.
I don't need you down there.
Thank you.
Stony Brook?
Yeah.
How long does it take from here?
To Stony Brook?
I think
that
would
have.
From here?
Yeah.
Really?
It goes straight east. And it takes about 45 minutes to get to my house, and then about half an hour to get to Stony Brook from my house.
Oh, boy.
Well, when are you going to Stony Brook?
I'm interviewing there for an internship.
Where?
Caps? Awesome! Yeah, but I don't know if it's really well for me to get there from Manhattan.
No. I mean, you'd be going against traffic, and I know someone who's in a place in Nassau right now goes from, like, very, very western Nassau. And she says it's fun because there's really good traffic, but it would take you, like, 2 hours from the city.
I would probably not live in that area.
Yeah, no. Mm-hmm. You would want to live, like, definitely in your community area.
Really?
Not the biasing, but not the great.
So, are we ready?
I got my sister.
Our next speakers require no introduction, so they won't get any. You can introduce yourselves. As you know, Svi and Shani went into the belly of the beast, working with parents, no less, and consulting with them, and so many, too.
Not your fault. Not your fault. So, share with us the experience, the highs, the lows, the dreams, the fears that was Consultation
2013. Sure. Okay, thank you. So, we spoke to parents for our school, and part of the process of planning this whole consultation was Jeff put us in touch with Miriam, and Miriam put us in touch with somebody named Josh Noble, who's a social worker at the school, and he called us on the phone to coordinate with us and to give us a little bit of information about the school and to get an overview of the kind of thing we would do. So that was kind of a helpful way to gain, I guess, psychological entry into the system, because he had contacts within the school. He was already running a support group earlier in our presentation. So he
on the same day, you mean?
The same day, the hour mm-hmm. before. So he offered to invite the participants in his group, and he also volunteered, even though usually I think that particular night was meant for parents of teenagers. He opened it up to all parents in the school. And in order to try and increase parent participation, we did create a flyer that we sent to him, and he distributed it to the parents. And in the end, two parents came to our presentation, which was one more that had been in his group earlier that day. So
oh, really?
One came especially for
and
us.
One more that I was affected personally.
I mean, he mm-hmm. told us when he was on the phone with us, you know, you could expect anywhere from none to like six or seven parents. So, you know, I feel like we had a pretty realistic expectation going in, and we also designed our presentation to accommodate that size crowd. You know, like, they kind of discouraged us from making a formal, like, PowerPoints or anything like that, which, you know, I was actually thinking of doing before we had this conversation, but it sounded like a more informal, intimate kind of discussion would be more appropriate, so that was what we planned. And in addition to the two parents who came, we also had two staff members. Josh Noble himself was there, and another social worker from the school was also there.
So you had four school representatives, really. And since you're representing Rebecca's school, and two parents.
You know, it actually, to me, it felt a little more like we had two consultants and four consultees, because even though the two of them were staff, technically, they were really participating in the discussion. I mean, I guess they were kind of on the fence. They were between us and the parents, but they were really taking part as though they were, you know, part of the group. So I kind of felt like we were presenting to the parents and the staff.
I felt the same way. That really, the sense in the room was that we were presenting to the four of them. It wasn't mm-hmm. that the four of us were presenting for the parents.
Mm-hmm.
That they came kind of, like, I mean, they were there also to help, you know, technically facilitate, but they were to manage it, right? But I mean, they were there, the way that they expressed it also, that they were there because, like, they found that they would need help in, you know, communicating it to the parents on their end. So they mm-hmm. were coming to hear from us, you know, how they should communicate to the parents. So it was kind of a consultation with parents and staff. So.
Yeah. And in a way, I mean, like, I guess, ostensibly, I think of the children as the client system, but you could also think of the parents as the client system and the staff.
Sure,
as
the consultee. That's
so
interesting.
Kind of like a three-tier
right.
meeting.
Okay.
Okay, so generally speaking.
So you gained entry.
We gained entry.
We gained entry.
All right, entry gained.
It was actually not as easy as it sounds.
I'm not going to be in the school. So.
Yeah.
Okay, so like, I mean, it's going to be during the day, so it should be someone sitting there.
Yeah, give them some pointers.
It's not so easy. Like, the door doesn't open. Something's really to open it for you. Yeah.
There was nobody at the security desk at the hour that we were at the school.
Really?
Yeah.
So what did you have to do?
Well, he had given us his cell phone number, so he was in the building already conducting a different meeting. We called him, and he came down to let us in.
So he had to stop the meeting he was in and come down just to let you in?
Yeah.
Oh.
Also, and the other social worker who was coming was in the building. I think she was actually the one who let us in. She
yeah.
was standing near the door. So
she was, like, waiting for us. Okay, so basically, we generally, you know, adhered as much as we could to Doherty's outline of mm-hmm. the stages.
Mm-hmm.
But there were, you know, there were a certain amount of things that, you know, I guess we'll get to the content of what actually happened in the consultation in a minute, but there were some parts that were, because of the nature of it, you know, it was like a little bit challenging to really strictly adhere to his formula. For example, I don't remember which one it was called specifically, but basically from the fact that, you know, this was a class assignment, first of all, mm-hmm. The fact that they, and they're just calling a spade, they were coming to doing us a favor also, you mm-hmm. know, they didn't ask for, they didn't initiate the referral, they
right.
didn't have a referral question per se, although, you know, as we developed it, we kind of developed it into a referral question of present healthcare,
mm-hmm.
And the fact that it was really a one-time, just a one-time deal, basically. Mm-hmm. So that was something which, I mean, I wrote about this in my paper a little bit, but that was those factors contributed to some challenging, you know, adherence to this formula.
Mm-hmm.
We tried as best as we could to, you know, within that, try to make it a little bit more, you know, do more follow-up or do, you know, try to make it into a referral type, but that was something that was challenging. But aside from those aspects, we really, you know, we adhered like a different. I think we, like, you know, besides for the physical entry, a psychological entry, you know, we had through that conversation with Mr. Noble. But basically, we pretty much adhere to it. In terms of the actual content of the consultation, it was nice, I think. It was kind of fluid. You know, we had prepared a lot. We met beforehand. We prepared research and practical, you know, practical obstacles to self-care, practical suggestions, things like that. But at the same time, we kind of allowed it to be a little bit more fluid and like a conversation,
mm-hmm.
which I think they were looking for anyway. So that was also kind of gaining psychological entry in terms of, you know, understanding the nature of the conversation that they were really looking for. So I think you're right in that it was good that we didn't prepare a PowerPoint, ultimately. But basically, we're talking about just the importance of self-care. In terms of research and practicalities,
mm-hmm.
We asked them for their input about what, you know, what trouble they had with self-care, and then we kind of gave them some ideas of how to do self-care, you know, even given the hesitations that they had or given the challenges that they faced. It was interesting actually because I think as Shani said last time, what we anticipated being the setbacks. Or the challenges of self-care weren't actually the case with the parents that we found. That's something that I wrote about also. That, like, that was the main challenge that we kind of had to, like, pivot on the spot, you know.
Right.
Yeah. I think in a number of ways, we weren't really talking to who we thought we would be talking to. Like, first of all, just, like, almost all the literature that we found had to do with, like, mothers of children.
Right.
Especially,
but these two parents were mothers? Oh, they were fathers.
Yeah, my fathers.
See, I was thinking, didn't everybody think mothers?
Yeah, I assumed.
Yeah, we assumed.
They were both fathers. They were both married, so it was, like, you know, intact
families.
They seemed to be financially okay. And... Right, I think we were maybe expecting a little more resistance to the idea of self-care or just a little more, like, skepticism in general. And they kind of had, like, a very open attitude to begin with.
I think even more than that, like, they seemed to be, you know, doing some self-care.
They were doing stuff already, yeah.
I was kind of imagining, I don't know about you, I was kind of imagining getting there and parents being like, oh, I wish, you know, like, I wish. They were, like, exhausted and frustrated, and, you know, but they were kind of like, yeah, we got it.
Or I kind of thought that they were going to be like, it's very nice, like, good idea, graduate students.
Right.
In our world, it doesn't really work.
But they were like, I jog twice a week, and if I can't jog a third time, I'm really frustrated. It's like, okay, you're fine.
you're talking to people who actually... organize their time well enough to attend.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. So I think we mentioned this last time too. That
self-selected.
I felt I was kind of like preaching to the choir. You know,
I think you said that there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I think I said that to them, that like people that are coming, making time to come to. You know.
Right.
But at the same time, like they were both. I think they had atypical situations that, you know, with their child. One of them, the child was very high functioning. He had Asperger's. And he was pretty self.
He was going to the school.
He was going to the school, yeah. He was actually, during our meeting, he was home by himself. He was taking care of himself. Yeah.
How old is he?
15, 16, in that area. And the other one seemed to be a little bit lower functioning, mm-hmm. but he was 19. So parents, you know, have been dealing with this, with mm-hmm. this issue of time and, you know, resources, et cetera, for 19 years. They kind of had a system in place of respite and mm-hmm. people, you know, day have workers that are, you know, respite workers, things like that. So he was also, you know, generally being watched.
Yeah. So that was one of the things that we had anticipated being like one of the biggest barriers, because like in Steve's experience, dealing with parents, that can be one of the hardest things, finding child care and getting out of the house that, mm-hmm. that didn't happen to be an issue for these two mm-hmm. people that were there.
Because their children were so different in the way that they were functioning and the level of functioning, did you find it difficult to address like both parents? Do they have different needs?
Mm-hmm. They had different needs. I feel like our particular topic didn't relate as closely to the functioning of the child. Mm-hmm. Also, I felt like the bigger difference between the parents was just their personalities.
Yeah.
Like, one of them was very outgoing, very talkative, very gregarious, and the other one was, like, much more reserved. Mm-hmm. So I felt like that was a little bit of a juggling act, like, trying to mm-hmm. engage them with the discussion.
And were they friends with each other, or?
They never met each other.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so it was interesting. It was definitely, it was not only a challenge, I think, more, like you said, with the personalities and making sure, the one that was more outgoing didn't dominate. Like, dominate,
yeah.
And, like, kind of, like, firebomb the whole thing, you know?
I thought the staff helped us with that a little bit.
Yeah, they were good at that. But one interesting thing, actually, I think that we didn't talk about last week, or 2 weeks ago, I didn't even write about this in the paper, but just thinking about it now, something that I kind of felt, I don't know what the word is, but I'll describe, you know, what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like in an interesting situation in that, in terms of relating to the staff. You know, the parents I've done before, and even, mm-hmm. like, I've consulted, so to speak, the staff before, but I don't, it was like an interesting situation, like, being in a position that the staff, at least the way they were presenting themselves, the staff, like, coming to learn from us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And trying to, you know, kind of be not an authority figure, because I wasn't an authority to them, but being also, I wasn't an expert, but being in that type of position with regard to two people who spent their entire day, you know, 5-6 days a week,
right,
doing this professionally, and like they were still coming to hear what we had to say. So I don't know what the word is, but it was like just an interesting.
Well, expert. I mean, in a sense, you are the experts on self-care. That's why you went there.
Right. And I felt like, of all the things that we talked about, the ones that had the most to do with psychology were the ones that I felt at least more confident talking mm-hmm. about, and I felt like they received the most enthusiastically as though they hadn't necessarily thought of that before.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that was an interesting experience for me. What else should we cover?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see.
So what, can you say something a little bit about the diagnosis stage?
That's actually what I was about to comment on, because mm-hmm. that was partially, for me at least, that was partially challenging in terms of the nature of, you know, this consultation. That on the one hand, like, there was a very clear diagnosis or means of diagnosis, but we didn't really come to it on our own. I mean, generally in consultation, because it already talks about how you kind of spend time before, you know, putting in any interventions, kind of like assessing and diagnosing and coming to the diagnosis collaboratively with the client, or at least, you know, the client system. But we didn't really do that, because it was really only, you know, one time. So really our mode of diagnosis was really through the social worker's reports to Miriam, mm-hmm. then, you know, pass it on to us that this is a topic that you really should address.
Mm-hmm.
So it was interesting, like, kind of being handed a diagnosis, kind of, and
right,
to address that instead of seeing it on our own. Like, that's really,
you're trusting the consultee has already made an accurate diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And especially since, you know, the, again, due to the nature of out of the consultation. It's different than a regular consultation in which they're kind of a captive audience. You know, like if you say, okay, this is the issue that I think is going on in your, you know, in your environment, even if they disagree with you, they're still going to be there and they kind of have to at least hear you out, you know? Whereas if we misdiagnose, so to speak, the issue in the Rebecca school, parents aren't just going to show up. If they don't feel like they agree with the diagnosis, they're just, not only are they not going to listen to us, but they're not even going to come.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of a, you know, tricky part of the diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I felt like our conversation with Mr. Noble on the phone was a little bit about the diagnosis. I think we did a little bit of, like, on-the-fly diagnosis when we got there, and we just kind of chatted with the parents at first, you know, what's your name, you know, how old is your child, you know, we learned a little more about the school just from that discussion. Oh, my child is in the transitions program. Oh, what is that?
Right.
So we were able to take in some of that information as we were meeting them.
So the entry stage and the diagnosis stage had a lot of overlap.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Okay. So the intervention stage. So, I mean, the intervention stage was basically just carrying out the meeting. You know, again, like, it's not a typical consultation in that you kind of, you know, suggest an intervention to be carried out by, you know, a typical consultee.
Mm-hmm.
On the client system. Here is more, I formulated at least, like, that was our intervention. You know, teaching them about self-care, basically.
Now, if you were to think of your presentation as a form of prevention, what level would it be? Primary? You think? What do you think?
Tertiary, they're probably already stressed. Or that was secondary.
Well, are they at risk or are they burned out?
I feel like it could be all one
and a half.
Well, I don't think it would be primary because they're not like from the general population.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking secondary, but I guess if they're already experiencing some burnout, maybe it could be a little bit tertiary as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's not like a linear progression. It's cyclical. Like one of the parents was saying how his 19-year-old son, who is pretty severely impaired, I think requires a lot of care, went away for a summer or for a week. What was it?
A week
in the summer. And that sounds like a relatively new thing for the parents. So, you know, they felt like they were kind of able to catch their breath, which was something they hadn't had a chance to do before. Like a static situation,
right,
that was evolving.
And we divided our presentation into three kind of sections. One was just establishing, like, what is self-care, why is self-care important, and then the second was, you know, eliciting what are challenges to self-care, and then the third was more practical discussion of ways to engage in self-care.
Who led which sections?
Back and forth.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
We did, I think, outline who was going to say, you know, which part. But I think we both contributed to all parts, you know, as did the other members
did,
today, you know, and other social workers.
It was really an interactive discussion throughout.
I think
it
was also helpful when we added in, like, outside material, you know, like stories and other references to other disciplines, you know, to kind of emphasize the need for self-care, so I think that was also very well received.
Yeah, and I felt like even though we were talking to people who were maybe a little more motivated in self-care than we thought they would be, they definitely seemed to be, like, you know, like, strengthened by the motivational part of the talk anyway, and be like, yeah, you're right, we really should do more of that at work. Yeah, the second part also, like, the barriers to self-care, you know, I was a little concerned, like, one of the things that we brought up was guilt. As a barrier to self-care, and at first I was concerned that that would not necessarily be so relevant to the people we were talking about, because they were like, oh yeah, self-care, rah, 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 you know, and
I jog 15 times a week,
but, you know, the more we talked about it, and I guess it was also part of the, like, collaborative way that we were talking about it, people did sort of open up a little bit and say that they did feel that way, and the staff were also opening up about that
I was actually thinking that that became like a very strong theme within, you know, that was something that everyone kind of related to. That became, yeah, like guilt. You know, like that's something that everyone like had experienced.
Uh-huh.
And that's something that was like a common, I found it to be like a very big theme.
Yeah.
Taking time for themselves versus taking care of their children.
Yeah.
And spouses and other children.
Right.
And I felt like in general, one thing that all the people in the room had in common were we were caretakers of some sort. So whether we're therapists or social workers or parents, you know, we all do take a lot of time in caring for other people. So, you know, I felt like in that way, we were all sort of able to relate on that level for the need for self-care. Because even if we're not parents of children in Rebecca School, you know, we are therapists and, you know, self-care is important for us also, so.
And self-care is important for us as people. So it's kind of nice when, like, we and other social workers kind of reflecting on our own self-care practices, like
yes.
what we do.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of, like, brought out, like, a little bit of a personal touch, you know,
mm-hmm.
even within this consultation.
So a little bit limited self-disclosure.
Yeah.
And also another thing about the guilt that we brought up was not just guilt about, like, taking time for yourself, but guilt about your own, like, inner experience of taking care of a special needs child, like, you know, resentment that you might have or anger or
mm-hmm.
you know, feelings like that,
mm-hmm.
Even if you acknowledge that you need to take a nap or whatever, you know, like it might be a lot harder to acknowledge that you need to make some space for, you know, hating the fact that you're taking care of this kid. So,
were they able to say anything about that? That's a little bit on a deeper level.
Too personal. I think they related to it and they agreed with it.
I think they took it in, like,
yeah.
They were like nodding.
Right, but I don't think they were ready to share. Nor was it necessarily appropriate for them to share
mm-hmm.
about, you know, their resentment about having to raise the kids.
Right.
Yeah, we weren't asking them to disclose necessarily.
It wasn't group therapy.
Right.
But they stand the receptive to
mm-hmm.
the idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was basically the content of it. In terms of follow up, we were.
Well, I just, sorry to interrupt, but did they ask questions? Did they try to pick your brain about, like, specific strategies, or...
We did. When we were... In the third segment, when we were presenting the specific strategies,
mm-hmm.
So we presented some, we asked them for some, and we asked questions to each other, you know. We kind of were all consulting about it, or collaborating, I guess, about those. But yeah, I mean, it was like a nice discussion.
So what strategies did they come up with that you hadn't thought of?
That we had
jogging. Jogging.
Well, there was that whole pet aspect. Like,
right.
I mean, the guy who talked about jogging, so she said that he jogs with his dog, and it sounded like the dog is very therapeutic to him also.
Mm-hmm. So a little animal therapy.
Oh, that's right. what other things, like what other specific things we had thought of that they brought up? Well, they were kind of just reflecting more on their own practices and what practices that they did already could be strengthened. You know, that was kind of something that we were talking about, how you could go out and start a yoga class, you know, start doing something that you don't do presently, which is one aspect. Another aspect is kind of strengthening things that you do already.
Mm-hmm.
Either self-care practices, you know, jogging, just being more aware of the need to jog and, you know, being more cognizant of it. But also kind of... we're talking about infusing everyday activities with a self-care aspect, right? Like, we're talking about, like, singing in the shower, for example. Like, you have to be showering anyway. When you're showering anyway, like, sing in the shower. Like, that's self-care, you know? Like, you have to look in the mirror anyway. So, like, try smiling in the mirror when I was looking. You know, like, you're doing these things anyway. So it was
is this what you do, Speed?
It is, actually.
A little self-disclosure there. All right.
I feel like to stick in the shower, you know, now and again.
That's good.
But, yeah, so we were talking about those type of things, and they were kind of reflecting on how those might manifest in their lives specifically. So,
I think one other point that one of the parents brought up was, you know, that even if you are doing some sort of self-care, it's kind of easy to fall off the bandwagon. Like he was, the other one, not the jogger, but the other one was saying that he would do exercise and he felt great about it, and then if there was some kind of interruption in his schedule, it would be hard to get back to
mm-hmm.
that. So I felt like he was reinforcing for them in that way in terms of, you know, just kind of resolving to make sure that happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that was implementation.
Mm-hmm.
And What about disengagement?
So disengagement, I found to be out of the four, to be the stage which was most lacking in terms of our adherence to, you know, the formal formula, mm-hmm. just again, because of the nature
mm-hmm.
of it. And that, the disengagement was kind of like,
oh, would you look at the time?
We didn't even have to do that, actually. Mr. Noble was like, that's our hour, you know?
Oh. He's like, well, we're getting closer to 7:30, like...
Right. I mean, which I thought was nice in terms of, like, the frame, you know? Like, we said we were coming for an hour, and they adhered to that, and they kind of kept that structure in place. You know, we did have time for, like, a few questions, comments, whatever. We got handouts to give them, which they seemed to appreciate. And, it was a pretty quick disengagement.
We did communicate with them afterwards, first of all, to thank them, but also, well, first of all, we were talking with them for a little bit afterwards, after the parents had left, the email, so I'm sure her name, she had to leave. We were talking to Mr. Noble for a little bit, kind of assessing how it went, kind of, you know, getting some feedback about it. So that's, you know, that was definitely part of the implementation, the disengagement stage. They invited us back to come see the school in action, which I would love to do. The other phases of the disengagement stage, you know, in terms of, first of all, gradually, you know, decreasing your involvement, like, that's not really practical here. Evaluation. And the evaluation of the consultation.
Did you guys make up a questionnaire to give to the parents?
We did. No, we didn't.
Something you guys should think about.
We got it covered.
Ooh.
Oh,
right. That
would have been a good idea. Wish I had
thought of that. So in terms of the evaluation with actual, you know, consultees, so we did it. We got some feedback from Mr. Noble about how it went, mostly positive. So that was generally our disengagement solution.
So you want to write something about that feedback that you got in your papers?
It wasn't very concrete. It wasn't, you know, like, this is something that you can do for next time. It wasn't like that. I mean, it was more about reflecting on which parts they really seem to pick up on, and which part they really...
I think that would be important to include. I mean, papers aren't due until next week, so...
Uh-huh.
Well, because they...
Oh, you told us that ours was due today.
Oh, you can hold on to them for another week.
Oh, okay.
And if you want to turn them in, you can, but it's not fair for you guys to have one less week.
Well, I have it anyway. So
yeah.
I'm
ready to go.
All right. Okay.
So, yeah.
I mean, they get a whole extra week.
Another week. That's right. It's good to know. It's nice to have it finished.
Okay.
I'm jealous of you guys.
Yeah, me too.
Any questions?
I think I'm a little relieved to hear how well it went, although I think I'm still a little nervous about ours, I guess, because I'm a little worried that they might know more than we do about this, and working with these kids every day.
Probably not about the pharmacology, that's true. That's true.
I wouldn't think so.
Probably not.
But I wonder, like, how much they, my question is how much they know about, like, their kids are on, even.
So how would you handle it? You know, I don't know. It was okay.
Yeah, we're not gonna make it up.
Yeah. I would just make it up, you know.
We also know, like, how
I got this from Dr.
Bio
Goodman.
Long Island University. Like, they set up what neurotransmitters are.
Phone since
summer. See the podcast before.
But if they did ask questions like about neurotransmitters or whatever, that we have the PowerPoint from yesterday from our class, right?
You could say you could speak to Grace Rossi.
Actually, we were actually going to print out the slide that got into more detail in case they were wondering, like, what's the difference between this antipsychotic and
yeah,
this
I think,
antipsychotic. We have...
Or maybe give them a copy of the entire PowerPoint presentation.
Right. Yeah. Just in case they wanted to know that, but otherwise, it's nice to hear that the parents... Because, I mean, I was thinking the same thing. They work with these kids every single day. What are we going to say that they don't already know?
Now let me ask you this question. So you've taken this course and you've done a consultation. What could I have taught you differently or more of that would have prepared you or helped you better in your consultation experience?
I feel like what we've covered in this class has more to do with one of those more extended consultations,
right.
Like we mentioned in the beginning, these, you know, hello, goodbye kinds of consultations that we're doing.
The time-limited consultations.
Very time-limited.
Yeah.
It's different by nature and just works kind of differently.
Yeah. Okay.
I was going to say the same thing, actually. I'm trying to think, is there a practicum that you could assign either instead of or in addition to this practicum that you did, which would stimulate a little bit more of the, you know, generic type of consultation.
Yeah.
I don't know what that would be. I'm just trying to think.
Or maybe in theory, just like reading a case study and brainstorming.
Mm-hmm. Of a time-limited type of consultation.
No, I think you meant a longer one.
Well, not time-limited in terms of hello, goodbye. Like, first of all, maybe addressing more of the unique aspects of this type of constellation, but also, in addition to that, maybe a practicum could be, for example, following an actual psychological consultant, mental health consultant, or school consultant in their consultation.
Oh.
I don't do any context with, you know, school consultants, but following them in their consultation, maybe, to see how it actually works in practice.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's interesting.
It's obviously very complex, first of all, for the context reason, but second of all, because generally speaking, you know, any consultant is not going to begin, you know, on September 1st and finish on December 15th. So, like, you're not going to see the whole consultation.
Right.
You know? So, right.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're both valuable because, like you said, sometimes consultants do work on the fly. Like, if you're a school psychologist and a teacher, grabs you in the hallway, like,
yeah.
I'm here. Yeah. So, but if it's, you know, but I think it would be a great experience to be able to follow someone who's doing.
It's just so hard getting into a school, you know. The first time I taught this course, we actually did a consultation in a Haitian primary school in Brooklyn. And that dried up the next year. I contacted Roosevelt Academy. I couldn't even get anybody to talk to me. Mm-hmm. And so that didn't work. And then I had this great idea about the Rebecca School. Knowing that one of our alumni is the director of the school, and that did pan out. But even that, as you could see, Miriam was very slow to respond to me and to respond to you guys, and you know, it almost didn't happen. So it's hard to get into a school and to so that you guys could shadow, or the next class could shadow, you know, somebody.
I'm wondering if because this following suggestion is not exactly a school, you know, we've been talking about, maybe it would be in addition to this type of experience. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could contact academic advising here or something, that maybe there's some form of consultation that they do towards Long Island University or anything.
Right, like a freshman plus.
That type of thing, yeah. And have us...
Interesting.
You know, because it's higher education, it's not exactly the same, so maybe it would be in addition to their back of school.
So you think students should have more work in this class, not less work?
Well, maybe that could supplement the first paper.
Ah!
Oh.
So maybe the first paper could be about the Rebecca School, the second paper could be about the cumulative experience of, you know, following the academic advisors in a consultation to certain professors or a program.
Interesting. Yeah. I'll have to explore that idea. I like that because it's in-house, and you would think that there would be some opportunities for our students to at least observe, if not actually do consultation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for that suggestion. I think it still ends up being a little bit more work for students, but... You know, would you be willing to do that if the curriculum, if the syllabus had been
personally
structured differently?
I probably would have, especially if it would, if it was, you know, the papers were aligned with them.
Yeah.
Again, not, maybe people would disagree with me. I'm personally, I like experiential learning. I respond a lot better to experiential learning, much better than to, you know, research and those that type of paper.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have enjoyed that. Yeah.
Maybe even. If it would work into the schedule to spend some of the class time doing something like that.
Yeah.
Like role play, you mean?
No, like maybe visiting, you know, whoever it was here. I mean.
Oh, like going somewhere during class
small
time.
Class for us all to go together.
Okay.
Because I was going to
pick up field trip.
Steve's idea is that how many times are we going to be going there and. When you go, I guess.
Common hour?
Okay, or maybe, but I don't know if they have, they need during
common
hour.
Or alternatively, you know, another model, I mean, I just grew up with the university and so many moving parts of the university to find something.
Yeah.
But it could be also that maybe the class itself, especially if it's a smaller class like this, could use the advantage of maybe we would be consulting to a part of the university. Maybe you can find like a professor or a program or a department that is looking for some kind of consultation.
Mm-hmm.
And with your guidance, you know, as a class, and part of the class time would be, you know, the presentations and the content, and then part of the class time would be our actually going and consulting with whoever might need consulting. I mean, obviously, it would be a lot of research for you to find, you know, a project.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we as a class did that project, especially
so like,
during class time, you know.
The roving consultants.
Something like that, yeah. Like kind of living through the you know, for the first half of the class we'll talk about, you know, aspects of the entry stage, and then the second half of the class, like, take break, and then we'll go do the entry stage. You know what
wow.
I mean? So obviously it's I'm sure it's much more complex than that, but like that model, you know what I mean?
Right.
Or
yeah,
alternating weeks.
Yeah, I'd have to think about who would be interested in our services and what kinds of projects we could consult on as students. I have to think about that.
Or we could consult, not really in school then. I was going to say we could consult to maybe the student what's it called, the student support center or something. Like we could
the counseling center?
The counseling center, maybe like we could consult to them on psychological issues facing college students, although we face a similar thing that they're kind of aware of those issues also.
Through the experts.
I don't know how they would take that.
Right.
And the time
they
have
their
own like intern and external that come on with them too.
Yeah, and they're also, I don't know if you heard, they're very territorial.
Right.
And
so,
they don't like us.
Losing patients to the PSC.
Right.
Oh, I just had a white ball idea. No, not possible. I just realized. I
Let's hear the light bulb.
I was confusing Tuesdays and Thursdays, but I remember the PSC has the in-service hour Tuesday morning. So I was thinking, like, what if we consulted the PSC? We have to consult there. They're like right here. Mm-hmm. We would have to go to
the maybe they could move it to whatever day this class is.
Yeah. I guess it's always maybe Thursday mornings or not always.
Well, it would coincide with the other
it has to be a Thursday
concentrations.
Third and fourth year. So
yeah.
Thursday, so
Tuesday, so you guys couldn't come on Tuesday because of externship?
Yeah.
On Tuesday morning, you guys are on externship?
I'm assuming everyone was here.
Yeah.
That is a nice
idea.
So,
like, it'd be so easy to just go over to Lodge A. Let's go consult there.
But, you know, if Tom were willing to move an a Tuesday morning meeting to Thursday,
right.
So the second year students are moving to Thursday just for 1 week, you guys would be here, then it would work. You guys couldn't go to Tuesday, but maybe they could come to Thursday.
Oh, you know what? If they have staff on Thursday, staff doesn't start till 10 on Thursdays.
Wow.
Could work out, maybe. I think that's in the spring semester. In the fall, they have something.
You know, I guess in my thing, I've always been locked into, okay, school consultation. It has to be in a school
right.
setting, you know. But, you know, this says psychological consultation.
Right.
And I'm teaching you a broader perspective on consultation so that, you know, eventually when you get your licenses, you could actually consult with a corporation or any kind of organization. It's written that broadly. And so that would include consultation in a university setting. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
Or a mental health community center setting, which is sort of what the PSC is. You know, it's like community mental health. So these are great ideas. Wow. I think that would be an easier one to implement than just something more vague like academic advising, although that might work, but this seems more in-house.
Yeah.
Going through less people to get to.
Now, what about, you know, you said you wanted an actual experience of observing consultation. What about going with Tom to do a consultation on a trauma assignment, something like that? Would that work, or?
I think that would be, it would probably present the same challenges as the ones that we experienced. That's really a one-time
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right, and you can't necessarily predict that or plan it into the schedule.
Right. That's true.
Although he's usually doing something.
Yeah, he's very rare right now.
Unless you had control of the weather, Shawnee, and then. So what else? I think you guys did a nice job, right?
Yeah,
were you pleased
nice.
With the way you... Were you pleased with the way that it went?
Yeah.
So you'd feel comfortable doing it again? Like, if you worked in a school setting as a psychologist, you could do something like that?
Yeah.
So, hopefully more comfortable than you were before you took
right.
the class.
Right.
I would hope.
For sure.
All right, any questions from you guys about tomorrow? Any kind of consultation you want us to help you with? A little mini consultation here? You guys are the consultees at this point.
Yeah.
We made a PowerPoint because she wants to prepare for more people. Not like 20. I don't know if all the people are required to go, or people expect since they're already going to be there in school that they'll go. But, no, I think you guys need to know a lot better about it.
And you answered the questions we had about the
presentation.
Was there a lot of traffic at that time?
What time did you
get
the
train?
Oh, that's right.
Where are you guys coming from?
Long Island.
I'm coming from New Jersey, but there's a bus that goes straight from my building, basically.
Okay, and then you'll just, take the subway?
Yeah.
You're driving, Sandy?
Yeah, because I've got to go right back to Stony Brook after.
So, probably plan on leaving your car a lot.
That's what I figured, yeah. Instead of driving around.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I don't know.
So, Danny, you take the subway down to the one train down to 30. You take to 28th Street. No, 34th.
The Port Authority.
Or actually, no. Port Authority is at 42nd. So you take the shuttle.
I think it says
over to the one.
R?
Or the 6. The R.
The R or the 7.
You can take the 7 or the shuttle. It's an S.
Yep, I see that too here.
Yeah,
you
take the shuttle or the 7
yeah.
from 42nd Street over to the 6 train,
mm-hmm.
and then take the 6 down to 28th Street, I believe, right?
Okay.
I'll probably pick you up if you want.
Yeah, so if Annie can have a car, I'm just going to call her if you want. Yeah, it looks pretty simple. It's pretty close.
Yeah, it's close to Port Garden, so. Absolutely. It's not that far. All right, anything else? We can end early if you want.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you
sure.
for breakfast.
You're
yes,
welcome.
Thank you. It was very nice.
Sure.
Yeah,
French toast. Oh, thanks.